Not a big news week this week, but I'll give you a little excitement from Porter and Prairie Family Farm.
Okay.
What I found to be exciting, which there'll be two other people here listening. They'll be like, that was kind of cool.
These are for you, two people.
Yeah. We had Indian paintbrush flowers pop up in our prairie.
I saw you post about this. And you have not had Indian paintbrush in the past? Is that?
No, that's correct. And so sometimes I did a little. So what happens is like seed banks can be there for a long, long, long time.
You know,
Indian paintbrush is very native to Oklahoma. It's very hard. Like they're typically hardy, but with all of the usage of soil and everything.
Yeah. It's, I mean, when you drive down the highway at this time of year, you see it all over the side of the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Here early spring, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful flower.
Yeah, beautiful. And we haven't had it. We haven't had it at our place before.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is, you know, the seed banks can just lay dormant until it reaches the right, the soil is the right balance and everything gets laid out in place for it to thrive.
Yeah.
And it happened in the back pasture, which is where, you know, we're grazing cows and. We've been trying to, you know, cultivate the land a little bit more, trying to enrich the soil. So it was really cool. It was like, sweet, we're doing it.
Yeah.
We have a lot of different species of grass on our property.
That's good. That's what you want. Joel Salatin talks about this. I watched a video of his on, what's that organization where you have like these videos? You get a subscription to, and you get like expert videos on all kind of stuff. Haley.
Oh yeah. It's the homestead thing, right?
Yeah. The School of Traditional Skills.
That's right. Yeah.
So, on the School of Traditional Skills, which, was very cool. I had a subscription to for a while and really enjoyed it. He had a video that was talking all about this and how when it's amazing how, when a new person takes over a property, how much the land changes. The land seems to know it's under new management. And it's because you have all of a sudden different practices, different habits, doing different things at different times. You know, maybe the old, you know, they used to mow at this time and that caused certain biological things to happen with the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know.
Or they tilled it or they, you know, did a, you know,
right.
Whatever.
Or more likely in your case, you know, now you have cows on the property.
Right.
Which are enriching the soil in the way that they graze and the way, you know, the manure that they're leaving behind. And it really just creates a whole unique like biology in the soil because of the different things that are taking place on the surface. So I saw you post about that on X.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about that, how like, yeah. Well, you know, this is like your second year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it would make sense that this is be the time and even next year where you're going to start to see things that weren't here before.
Right.
Start to show up because specifically back there, there were no livestock back there before.
Right.
And now there are. And the livestock are going to be good for the land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was really pumped. You know, it's like, cool. We're trying to be really good stewards of the land and mm-hmm. the soil and
cattle have they're good for the land, you know, in the right number.
Right,
you don't want to put too much pressure on the land, yeah. But anyway, you're far from doing that.
Yes, so that's for you two people who are interested.
That's too bad because I'm one of those. I'm one of the two.
I figured you would be, and so.
And if Joel Salatin's listening, he's the other one.
There's the other one. Yeah,
he's gonna be like, yeah.
I taught them well.
I appreciate that.
So, what's going on with you?
Oh, man. So, I have started a very fun project this week. I decided I wanted to build my own automatic door for my chicken coop.
Okay. So, here's for the four other people who may be interested.
Okay. This is interesting.
We'll be the judge.
I've never attempted a robotics product before, what I wanted was a door that would close over my nesting boxes to stop my chickens from sleeping in there.
Yeah, because
the younger ones, especially who haven't, you know, they just haven't built the confidence yet to ascend to the to the roost.
And the roost, yeah. Their pecking order is still really low.
They still, they don't believe yet in themselves. So they will sleep sometimes in there, and you know, then they poop all in there. It's
right.
It's not, it's just
not good.
You don't want that for your eggs. So, I bought this actuator and a relay and a battery and
some blinker fluid.
Yeah. Some blink. Yeah. Obviously, you have to have the blinker fluid and a timer. And so I'm building this door that will slide up and down just to cover the hole. In my coop, there's a cutout that you go, that the chickens go into for that nesting box. So this board is just going to slide down to cover it. And I got it all wired yesterday, and it's working. It's very cool.
It's really cool. When you texted that to me, I'm like, yes, I'm really glad you figured that out. So now you can just teach me.
Because also, it was not expensive to buy all these things. I mean, like, I was shocked how cheap.
Yeah, you're like under $150 total.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like way under.
With the battery and everything.
Right. This actuator, which is basically an electric motor with a worm gear for a rod that comes in and out, can lift like over 300 pounds. It was like $30.
It's like one of my biceps.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how cheap that is.
Right. I mean, it was very cool. So I'm excited to build that because, you know, I'm going to be able to look at it and be like, I put this together. I designed and built this automatic door. So I was telling Pamela, what do you want the door to look like? Because we can make it, you know, I'll make it look like whatever we want it to look like. And I said, do you want it to look like prison bars that are coming down? She was like, yes, we could call it the henitentiary. And so when she said that, I said, that's it.
Say no more.
We have, yep, no more ideas. Quick, no more. Stop. This is the one I want.
Yeah.
So that's what we're gonna have the henitentiary.
Nice. That'd be cool.
And it's going to be good. Yeah.
Sweet. Your wheat's looking really good out there too,
The wheat is looking lush. Oh, yeah, at least in one spot.
Yeah, it's looking good.
One end of it, but it's all looking pretty good.
Yeah. Well done.
It's starting to turn brown. So that's, you know, when the wheat turns golden brown, that's when it's ready to harvest.
Then you can do the cinematic videos of your hand going through the wheat like in Gladiator.
Yeah, dude.
And then you just cut it down and throw it away.
Right. Just get your mower out.
And just mow it down.
Just wreck it. Yeah. So I have 12,000 square feet of wheat, which if you think about the size of your house, you know, you can multiply that, the footprint of your house. That's how much wheat I have. And I use a scythe to cut it down. So
it's going to be a lot of work.
I have triple what I did last year.
It's going to be like a week worth of nothing but scything.
No. The scything, cutting it won't take that long. I could cut it all in a day. Easy.
Really?
Yeah. No, I can't cut it, bundle it, tie it
by myself in a day,
but you know, that's what I have kids for.
Right.
So I'm going to be cutting. I'm going to build something called a grain cradle to attach to the snath of my scythe. The snath is the rod you hold on to. Yeah. And so it's basically just another piece of wood that comes out higher from the blade, but basically mirrors in shape the blade. So
it pushes it.
Yeah. It kind of just cradles. So when you cut it, the grain just doesn't fall straight down. Mm-hmm. It actually like lay it over to the side. And so it's all laying down. That way you can come and tie it and you have all of the bundles uniform in their direction, if that makes sense.
Nice.
Which will speed up the rest of the process.
Right.
So that's what I've learned from doing this now for several years is that the inefficiencies that show up throughout every other step of this process all come down to how did you harvest? And time and attention, even if it's a little slower into that harvesting process, is going to pay dividends like five times over.
There's like an apparent analogy here.
Yes. Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. Putting in, thinking about how it's, you know, now I've done it enough times where I can say, okay, I need to take my time on this one step to make sure that the leaves, you know, aren't in it, or, you know, just get all the sticks out and blah, 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 so that later on I'm not having to pick out little tiny pieces of leaf stem, which look pretty similar to a wheat berry. You know,
vices.
Yes, they get in there, dude.
Creep in.
Mm-hmm. So
I also want to give a shout out to my goddaughter, JoJo Klein. She received the sacrament of Holy Communion this last week.
All right.
Super awesome. They live out in Arkansas, and we went out there, and it was a lot of fun to be with the family over the weekend for Mother's Day, and you know, be able to be with her through that. And then I got to see my nephew Danny Klein play some baseball, which was really cool. He did fantastic.
See a slugger?
Yeah. Oh man, he was 2 for 2. Got at least one RBI, maybe two RBIs. Yeah, he played really well. And it was just really fun to go out there and watch him, and then get to hang out with the family for a little while. You know, we have not had a lot of regularity in our in our household recently, or being able to just spend time with family. And man, it does a soul good to be with family.
It does.
So that was a lot of fun. Mary's doing well as well right now.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask.
That's good. Yeah, Mary's doing well
right
now.
She's doing good. She's still having good days. Praise God.
She's having good days right now. So all right. We're going to keep those up.
A couple years ago, when Adam and I decided we wanted to lead our first pilgrimage, we asked around to find out who should we work with to help do this. And the thing we heard over and over again was Select International Tours. That's who you got to use. They're the best. Well, having used Select now, I can attest that they're incredible. No matter where it is you want to go in the world, Select has a tour ready for you. So whether you're interested in leading a pilgrimage or attending one, do yourself a favor and go to selectinternationaltours.com and take a look at everything they have to offer. You won't regret it. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're sipping on a little bourbon today. This is a bottle called Heaven Hill. It's bottled in bond. It's a Kentucky Straight bourbon whiskey. 7 years old. What do you think about it, Adam?
It's really good. It's one of the old legacy Kentucky distilleries that does it. Heaven Hill is the same with Elijah Craig.
Yeah.
They do Evan Williams.
Oh, okay.
But this one's really good. It has a good taste, not a big bite, but a good finish. Has some peanut quality to it. Like there's some almost like peanut butter-esque taste in it.
It was also very affordable. It was less than $50.
Nice.
Which I just got at one of the very regular liquor stores here in town, not one of the liquor stores that typically carries hard to find things, but just one of the ones that has regular stuff, but a pretty good selection. You know, it's not a small, it was a good size liquor store, but yeah.
It's bottled in bond.
Yeah.
Which is an act from 1897, which means that it has to be from one distillery, one distillation season, aged at least 4 years. Bottled at exactly 100 proof, and I think ours is 7 years, and it may actually exceed.
Yeah, it's also a Kentucky Straight bourbon whiskey.
Right.
Which is its own an additional
category. I would say, like, this
whiskey
is just like a no gimmicks, very good.
Yeah, but it's delicious. I'm very much enjoying.
Very solid.
Sipping on it, yeah. So I wanted to talk about the papacy today.
Ooh.
We just celebrated the one-year anniversary of Pope Francis's ascendancy to the papacy.
Yes, I want to give a shout-out to... I don't want to... To Patrick Stephen. He is a listener and a follower on Instagram, and he actually sent us a DM not too long ago. It was like, hey... Pope Leo's anniversary is coming up, and if you guys are looking for a topic to talk about, you should talk about the papacy.
Yeah. And you told me that after I told you we were going to be talking about the papacy.
Right.
You said, oh, that's perfect because we had some people suggest that.
Yeah.
So I was like, man, that guy has great ideas.
That we steal.
That because I also had that same idea. So he must be brilliant.
Probably so.
These were my thoughts. So, but yeah, just, you know, I heard like, oh, wow, a year since Pope Francis has been elected.
No.
I'm sorry, Pope Leo. And thank you for the correction. You know what? I still do that sometimes.
Dude, the other day we were praying the rosary in the car and, you know, at the very beginning it said, for Pope Francis and his intentions, our Father who art in heaven. And Luke was like, no.
Dad, stop.
And I was like, you're right. For the repose of the soul of Pope Francis and for Pope Leo and his intentions.
Yeah. I mean, I still say, it's hard for me to say Pope without Francis followed it.
Right.
Following it, yeah. So, but yeah, Pope Leo, been elected for now over a year. Doesn't seem like a year. Give me your thoughts. What do you think about Pope Leo?
I'm a big fan of the papacy in general.
No, that wasn't my question.
Right. But I was just starting off. You're just starting there.
Okay, great. It's big fan of the... Strong start.
Big fan of the papacy in general. I love that he's from America. That's like super cool. I never would have thought
to be able to hear him speak in English and American English.
Right.
You know, it's
which
like
is super exciting.
It just, you identify you every, when you hear him speak, it's
right.
Like, that's my guy.
Right. So that's super cool. I think I said this on the show a while back. We were on vacation away from our, you know, away from my phone and everything when the whole papacy thing was going down. Right. And so like, the first day, I was like checking my phone, trying to figure out like, you know, are we getting white smoke? Are we getting white smoke? And they didn't do it the first day. I think it was the second or third day that they did it, right? Like that it came to the conclusion. And I didn't have my phone and didn't have it for the day. And I turned my phone on and the first like notification that I got is like American Cardinal named Pope.
Did your heart drop?
And I was like, oh no.
Yeah.
I was like so nervous for whatever, you know,
but I had never heard of him.
Yeah. I was very,
and he
concerned,
you know,
at
he,
first.
No, he wasn't in America.
Right.
For a long time.
Right. So I was just very nervous at first and I'm very happy that he's Pope.
Yeah. Oh man, me too. Yes. I'm very excited about it so far. I think he's great.
Here's something that I was thinking about just, and this is aside from just the papacy, but I think it includes the papacy, is that in today's world, everything is just so fast. Information is so fast.
Yeah.
Instant access for everything.
Yes.
The way in which we're able to consume the amount of information, I'm not convinced that it's good for humanity. Or the person. I'm not sold on the idea that it's good for the person. Not sure.
You mean for people in general?
Yeah. The person.
Not just, it's not good for the Pope, but it's not good for us.
No. I'm
for
just
us.
Saying, that's what I said. This is a philosophy outside of the papacy can be applied to. That I'm not positive that it's good for man to be able to take instant information from somebody. Like what somebody said at any point in time. In fact, there was a study recently, not too long ago, about, you know, how there's men who are not getting married early, you know, and they were either interviewing them or they like gave them a survey or something like that. And one of the main reasons they said like men aren't like trying to court women. It's like anything that I do, if I get rejected, it's going on the internet. If I go up to a girl and I try to dance with her or something and I get rejected, somebody's recording it and it's going on the internet. If I try to, you know, if I say something and if I approach a girl and she declines me, someone's recording it and it's going to go on the internet. And there's so many things that are happening in today's world that everything is being recorded. And so there's the fear of like, I don't want to look stupid. And you don't, like, as a young guy trying to court a woman, you know, it takes a lot of courage
yeah.
to just get up there and you know, kind of throw yourself out there potentially to be rejected. And then you throw on another layer, which is something that I can't even fathom, because luckily I was not trying to court a woman in the age of all of this, where if you get rejected, you could end up being a meme, or you could end up being something on the internet that right. goes viral.
Some YouTube video.
Where you look ridiculous. And, you know, so I think that actually kind of plays a role in possibly like men not asking women out.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that there's a really good corollary in exactly that situation. Cause you know, everybody's seen these videos of like women at the gym, men who look embarrassing, or women catching men doing embarrassing things. And you have no context in these videos. Okay. You don't even know, right before this video, she was talking to him.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, but she edited that part was edited out of the video to make it look like this is just a random dude
mm-hmm.
coming up and getting rejected, or whatever the video is, right?
Right.
It doesn't even have to be that situation. But I think that there's the fact that you have no context is really what I'm trying to get at here for that fastness of information. And of course, the media is the competition within the media, between medias, is all about who can report first.
Right.
And so, of course, things like fact-checking,
context,
you know, who as the person reporting, it's their job to make sure that they're reporting things accurately within a context.
Right.
Obviously, that goes by the wayside because, well, we have to be first.
Right.
And so this speed that we as people end up demanding and wanting causes us to lose all of this context. So, for instance, the idea of the Pope being interviewed on a plane,
right?
With so this is spontaneity. I just okay. In some ways, is it great that we have like this, you know, access to the vicar of Christ, right? Like to the successor of Peter. Yeah. There is, there's a real beauty and there's a great message there about the access of grace in our life. And, you know, that the church, the highest member of the church would be willing to just be available. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's cool. Except that, we have now the person who represents the most powerful institution on earth, the church, the divine institution established by Christ, who is now being asked questions without any preparation, mm-hmm. has no idea what these questions will be. And whatever it is, the video will be edited in a way to make it look more sensational.
Yeah, so I think that there is a prudence that has to take place for the Pope and for any high official, that for all of humanity up until this point has never had to be exercised. Because anything that he says can be misconstrued, can be taken out of context. And it's really unfair for a human being to be put in that situation, right?
Yeah.
I mean, think about if you were in that situation and you could have an off day, you're tired, you're sleepy, you're not well, you know, your thoughts aren't coming to you well.
Right.
All of those things can play a role, and it doesn't matter. Like, that's just what your role is.
Mm-hmm.
And some dispositions aren't even good for that role.
Yeah.
And so the prudence that is required in a papacy these days is far more than ever before. But I am excited about Pope Leo's encyclical that's going to be coming out soon.
On AI?
On AI.
Yeah, dude, me too. I'm anxious. Challenge.
I'm anxious
I mean,
to
would
to
you
read
want
it.
To be the one to have to write it?
No.
No,
I mean,
not at all.
I mean, I'd ask Claude.
I mean, obviously. Obviously, I'd have Gemini, like, edit it.
Yeah.
Definitely, but, I mean.
No, I think it's a huge task. It's a huge assignment that he has taken on. I'm excited about it. You know, his name going after Pope Leo XIII, who's the Pope who wrote all about our social doctrine of the Church, and all about Mary. I mean, he Pope Leo is the 13th is big shoes to fill.
Totally.
Also, really cool that just Pope Leo XIII was the first Pope to ever be videoed, which is really sweet.
Yeah.
But obviously Pope Leo XIV took that name intentionally and knew that this is something that I was going to have to be.
Gosh, it'd be so hard to pick a name.
Oh yeah,
and especially whoever you pick, you're signing up.
That's your legacy.
You are filling shoes. Yeah.
The name kind of solidifies your destiny, so to speak.
Can we just do a sidebar on names? This is just one of my pet peeves.
Okay.
Can we do that? Take a step just for a second.
Well, one thing about the Catholic Mass is we typically don't do sidebars.
I would just like to offend some people real quick. Politely and with their own good in mind. I have these opinions about names that you ought to give your kids a good name. Don't make up a name. And I know that people are like, oh, it's unique. They're the only ones. Like, they're their own unique person, and that's so cool because I made this name up and they get to really just be whoever they want to be. Yeah, I think that that's boring. Okay. The purpose of a name, when you name a child, you are giving them something that's beyond them. Okay. They inherit a tradition. They inherit a meaning. They inherit a culture, something that is greater than anything that they will ever be able to attain. So my name is David. I always, from my youngest age, strongly associated with King David. And it's like, there's nothing I could ever do to reach the heights of the Davidic kingdom, okay? Like, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, just like me with Adam. It's like I always wanted to just walk around naked.
Yeah, and just like,
and it's like I can't
wreck
do that.
All of humanity.
I just can't do that.
So anyway, so that's my sidebar, is that inventing your own names is not good. You ought to give your child the gift of a name where they inherit something. A new name is an inheritance of nothing. Anyway, sidebar. Pope Leo picked a really good name.
Yes.
With, like you said, not just Pope Leo XIII, but if you go back, there's been some awesome
Pope Leos.
Yep. I mean, you have a Leo.
Yes. I mean, I named one of my sons.
But which Leo did you name your son after?
After the 13th.
The 13th? Okay, not Pope Leo the Great, because I think people probably assume.
No, it was after the 13th. Because Pope Leo the 13th, some of his encyclicals really were instrumental in my continued conversion into the Catholic faith, and his love for Mary and his social doctrines that he has of the Church was very clear, very, very understandable. And I felt like, so this is why actually the last couple kids that we've had, I've named them after saints who are very clear and their writings or their life was very clear-cut Catholic. So Leo Thomas, after Pope Leo XIII, Thomas Aquinas, John Dominic, after the apostle, St. John, and Dominic of the Dominican Order. It's just like, I did that intentionally. It's like very clear, because I think that's what that next generation is going to need. And so I wanted their intercessions for my children.
I'm just sitting here thinking, I only have one Catholic name. Of all my kids, only one of them are named after a Catholic.
What?
I have Elizabeth of the Visitation. Mary.
Catholic.
No. Well, I guess she was.
Yeah, she's definitely Catholic.
She's a Catholic. I think Elizabeth of the Visitation may have, I don't know when she died. But then I've got Bernadette. She's Catholic.
Yeah.
But then I've got David, Susanna, and Joseph.
Was Joseph after?
Well, Joseph died. The tradition is that he died when Christ was 30. But I feel like we can still count him as a Christian. I mean, like in a very informal but very legit way.
Do you think Joseph was baptized?
No. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't like positively think that he was. I don't assert. I don't stand on that. But I certainly don't.
By what authority?
I don't stand against it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, if you meet Christ, like in the flesh, do you need to be baptized? You know what I mean? Like, because he actually didn't. He didn't give the instructions to baptize until his ascension. It was like as he was leaving. So, you know, you got the good thief on the cross.
I mean, he kind of hinted. He's like, you know what? Hinted at it.
He's like, don't worry about it. Yeah, he does. And he does. Yeah. Even with some of the other people, like, unless you be born again through water. But anyway, total podcast for another time. I want to go back to the AI thing because I am also very excited about this because I really think that this encyclical could have a massive influence.
I hope
on the direction of the church. Because AI is here to stay, and we are part of this. I feel like our generation, this has been our like task in life, is that we are the ones figuring out how to use all of this. You know, the internet, when the internet came out, like baby boomers were like barely able to do it. They were all asking us, millennials, like, hey, how do you sign on? What is Wi-Fi? You know, and then we were given phones. And it was like us who had to figure out what's the social place? What's the code of conduct? Where does this fit in to society? So as millennials, I feel like this has been one of our major roles as, you know, in the place and time that we're living. So AI is just going to be one of these big things that we have to decide, where does this belong in our lives, especially as Catholics? Because our answer as Catholics is going to look a lot different, hopefully, than what the broader world chooses to say. So Pope Leo's encyclical will be hopefully our guiding light in answering all those questions.
Big task.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. So I don't want to get too deep into apologetics today. I'm not afraid of apologetics. Kind of love it, actually. But that's just not what I was hoping to do today. But I was reading some of Thomas Aquinas's thoughts, his musings, from Contra Gentiles and from the Summa about the papacy, because he actually wrote quite a bit about it.
As he does.
As he does, yeah. Like, sometimes I picture him writing with the right hand and left hand simultaneously, like
that'd be pretty cool.
Different things. I wish I could do that. I wouldn't do it.
Maybe Jude can.
Swing a bat. If you can swing a bat, you can swing a pin. Just makes sense.
You can dodge a hammer, or a wrench, you can dodge a ball.
I mean, come on. That's irrefutable. But one thing that I was musing on this week is how been, you know, thinking about this episode, is just the reality, the fact, the sort of the logical conclusion that, you know, Christ is head of the church. He is one. He is the high priest. There are not two high priests. He is the head of the church. There are not two heads of the church. It is Christ. He established one steward, one vicar, in his stead when he ascends, right? And we get this from the Old Testament Davidic kingdom, right? So much of the way the church operates takes its notes from the Davidic kingdom, okay? So when the king would leave to go to war because it was his job to go fight the battles, he would hand literally the keys of the kingdom to his steward. The steward would be the king. He had all of the authority of the king until the king returned, right? And so when you see Christ in the Bible in John 20:23 or in Matthew 16:18, he says specifically, I give you the keys to the kingdom. What you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. What you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. This is not symbolic. And the Jews at the time would have known, and they did know exactly what that meant, right? And so that's why you see Peter speaking for the apostles all the time, right? That they always defer to him. He's listed first almost every single time among the list of apostles because he was their leader, right? He was the steward of the king, right? Well, they all were apostles. He was the most important, right? And so he took over. He was the first pope. We have Pope Leo now. And I was just thinking about how obvious it is among all of these Christian churches, denominations, like the one that's true is the one that's been around for 2,000 years. Right? Because that's when it started. It was 2,000 years ago.
Loctite logic.
All right, so when we get back, I want to get your feedback, get your thoughts on some of these other elements of the papacy.
Okay.
We'll be right back. We're talking about the papacy today.
Kind of.
We are. We're talking about the things that we want to talk about it. That makes sense?
Nope.
I tried. So, the papacy, the question of the papacy, it really comes down to authority. So much of the differences between Christian beliefs, different Christian faiths, at the end of the day, it seems to always come down to authority.
Mm-hmm.
And
Trent Horn does a great job on this.
Yes, he does.
Trent Horn is one of the best apologists, I think, currently. And his goal is always to reach those who are furthest away from Christ. Like he makes that very explicit. It's like, I'm not here to go into the trenches of liturgy wars and inside like the Catholic Church. My goal is to reach people furthest away from Christ, which I love. I think that's a heart and a pursuit worth going after.
Yeah.
And ultimately, and he's an incredible debater just in general.
Well, he's a super smart guy.
And what seems to always come back in all of his debates, whether it's a Protestant, whether it's an atheist, whether, you know, regardless of it is, it's like, well, whose moral authority are you holding to? Is it your own? Is it your own interpretation? Is it your own worldview? Whose authority are you holding to?
Yeah.
Because everybody does. Everybody has authority that they hold to. Whether, you know, if you're Protestant, it's like, if you just say the Bible, it's like, well, okay, so how do you, like the interpretation of the Bible?
And who says that this even is what the Bible is?
Right. And what books are in the Bible?
Right. Yeah.
And, or if it's an atheist, it's like, okay, so is it always wrong to kill somebody? By whose authority? Like, the reality is,
if you're an atheist, why is it ever wrong to kill somebody?
Right. And then you have to wrestle with that.
Yeah.
And the reality is like, because authority is so good, it's so hard for some people to be able to allow to happen. It just, because it's so good, it also gets attacked so hard.
What do you mean by that? It's so hard for it to allow it to happen.
That it's so hard to succumb to, or to
submit to.
Submit to, yeah, yes. Yeah.
But we all know instinctively, inherently, that there ought to be authority on earth, right?
Right. Because we need order.
And we all yearn for it, right? We all, men instinctively seek to set up systems of authority, just even, you know, governing.
On a natural level.
The natural level, just our own secular societies. And that has always been the case in every culture, that systems and rules for who has authority have always been foundational to the very fabric of society, right?
And because it's so important, it also requires so much responsibility and and there's so much power associated with it. And because of that, it also can easily get corrupted. This is the same thing with the sexuality, right? The reason why sexuality is so good, our sexuality is so good, that it can also be corrupted so easily because it is so good.
Yeah.
The things that are like closer and closer to heaven realities seem to be the ones that get corrupted or intended to be corrupted the most.
The devil desires the corruption the most.
Right.
Yeah. And so he seems to work extra hard on those things. So when it comes to authority, as I have progressed in my own fatherhood, you know, continued to lead a family for longer and longer, and just seen how authority works out in my own life, when I have used my authority well, when I have not used it well, it's become very clear to me that my authority, and this is not like, oh, some brand new revelation from David Niles, this is what the church has said about authority, is that authority is given to a person not for his own sake, not that he might be glorified, not that he might be honored, right, to be, because, oh, yes, you're the king or you have this authority. Authority is given to you so that you might serve those over whom you have authority. It's given to you for the sake of the governed. And it is your responsibility at your own peril if you do not use it that way. Right? You have a responsibility to use it that way, I should say. So as fathers and as husbands, it is our obligation, it is our duty to use the authority we have as head of our families to serve our families. It is not so that our families might serve us, which is what you see Christ talking about with his apostles. You know, you've seen the pagans and how they make their authority over their subjects felt, but it will not be so among you, right? You will be the servant of those. And so with the papacy, we actually refer to the Pope as the servant of the servants of God. And so it's actually his job to serve the entire church, which is sounds exhausting.
What do you think that looks like in a practical way in today's world?
For the Pope or for the Pope? For the Pope? Gosh, you know, I think it's harder today than it used to be,
yeah,
honestly.
Because it's easy to say, he's the servant of the servants.
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
That can be just a platitude real quick.
Okay, so what does that mean?
So... just like in families, this is a big question.
Disclaimer: this is just our thoughts. This is not what the church teaches here,
right? But I would say, just like in a family, each one of your kids needs different things from you. Okay, and so I don't think you can just say what it means for the church to be or for the Pope to be the servant of, you know, the world. It means that he needs to be ready to serve the different members, the different parts of the body of Christ in the way that they need it at that time. And that is going to be different things at different times in different ways. So, you know, I feel blessed to have grown up in an era of Pope John Paul II. I think there were so many times where he was just the prototypical example of the Pope. You know, the way he intervened with the downfall of communism in parts of the world, you know, the ending of
talking about the Berlin Wall.
Well, the Berlin Wall, yes, but it doesn't matter. I'm totally blanking on
I was hoping to help you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. But he really used that authority that he had and his influence, his power, in ways that the church needed at the time. He wasn't afraid to step in and actually put himself at risk to intervene with governments, right? Where he felt like he could make a difference. So I think the first and always thing that is required of the Pope and a father and anybody with authority is prayer. That you have an obligation to pray all the time. The good thing is...
Can I ask a question real quick?
Yeah.
not to derail us too much, but the relationship there of the Pope has the duty to put himself at, you know, in harm's way almost for the sake of the good of those who he has authority over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what that looks like as a dad.
Yeah, that's a really great question.
Because as you were saying that, I was thinking like, yeah, I totally agree. Like Pope John Paul II, you know, like he was like willing to even go out there knowing that he could even get shot. Like, and he stood up against these governments. And
after he did get shot.
After he did get shot. He still kept going up. You know, it's like, okay, but what does that mean for dads? Like, what does that look like for, I'm willing to put myself in harm's way in this day and age for those who I have authority over?
Yeah. You know, probably you won't ever be putting yourself physically, you know, like you're probably not going to have to face the barrel of a gun to like do right. what's right for your kids.
Right. But what does it mean?
I mean, maybe you will, but that's just highly not unlikely. What I would expect.
Yeah.
But I think it might mean things about being sort of embracing a different kind of martyrdom, like a martyrdom of love. You might have to do things where your kids are going to, at certain stages of their growth, right? They might go through a phase where they are going to hate you. Maybe. You might have to, or at least you might have to own up to the fear, that fear inside you. Whether that's a reality, I think that's a fear in our minds often, way more than it is in reality. But that might be something you have to decide, no, I have to do this. I don't care what their perception of me is as I do this. This is for their own good. I love them. And no matter what they think about my choice, in order, in this moment, it's the right thing to do. I just think back of when I was a kid, my parents making choices I didn't like and being really upset about it. And as I got older, it didn't take very long, but as I got older, looking back and just realizing how foolish I was, you know, and of course, my parents were right to enforce those rules in those times for me, because if they hadn't, I was fully prepared and hoping to make some bad decisions. You know what I mean? So I think that's just one thing that, you know, you might have to put yourself in harm's way, so to speak.
That's fair. Yeah.
I'd like to get your thoughts on that question on the other side of the break.
Well
this
no
is
more.
The end. This is the end of the end of the hour
for radio.
So if you want to hear, go subscribe to the podcast.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
Raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus. Okay, so what do you think? What do you think it is?
I don't know. I asked the question because it came to me immediately, you know, when you were talking about it, and I was genuinely asking you.
I don't know. I was asking. I was asking you.
I would say though, most of it has to come to social pressures. Whether or not we really want to acknowledge it or not, I think that we do. Everybody desires to be liked and loved, and to be a good role model. Like if you're trying to live a virtuous life, your desire is like, I want to be a good role model. I want to be a good member of society. I want, when people think that, you know, of a good Catholic father, like, you know, I want them to think like, okay, examples today, like, okay, yeah, that guy right there, you know, David Niles. Yeah. He's a good Catholic dad. You know, you desire that.
Sure.
And even in Catholic circles, there's times in which you have to make decisions that may not lend itself to yielding those results. But it's because the decision that you're making is due to, like, that's what I feel like is good for the good of my family. And so there is a little bit of a self-martyrdom of pride and ego towards the outward facing world.
Yeah.
Of I'm taking a stand here, and even though these people don't understand why I'm making this and actually may criticize it and also may look down upon my decision, I'm still going to do it because this is what I feel like, you know, and like what I have, like both intellectually and in prayer, come to the conclusion this is the best thing for my family. In conjunction with the, you know, discussing this with my wife, you know, this is what we have decided is the best for my family. So I'm making a stand here. And whether that, you know, there's so many different examples you can come up with, whether it's, you know, technology or drinking or, you know, whatever it is that you are governing within your home, and you're making set boundaries and you're saying, this is what I'm going to do. There are times in which those priorities will get pushed back upon, even in your close circle of friends. And either it's like you're being too harsh or you're being too lenient, one of the two. But you have to decide, no, this is what I feel like is the best thing for my family.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's true, like what you're saying. And that's kind of what I was trying to get at too, that there will be decisions that you have to make for your family where, you know, often for your kids, right? That your kids are not going to like this decision. Your kids' friends are not going to like this decision. Very likely, your kids' friends' parents are going to be...
will not like this decision.
They're not going to like this decision. You will be on an island by yourself. You know, hopefully your wife is going to be there, you know, support you with in that. But sometimes, I mean, there might be times where, you know, hey, you have this great wife. She's supporting you, but she actually still doesn't necessarily fully agree with you. That's going to happen. I mean, or you can certainly see where you might happen, or that might happen. And a lot of times, like I tried to get at, was that I think a lot of this is you have a perception that it will be this way, and that, you know, Satan is really using that or trying to convince you anyway that,
sure,
you know, oh, you're going to put everybody out. You know, they already have all these plans,
right?
You know, whatever it is, you're backing out. It's going to ruin it for everybody.
Right.
This is going to cost you a business deal.
And the hard thing is that, you know, and as I mentioned, maybe an episode or two ago when I was talking about Mary, it's like fatherhood looks different for everybody, right? For all of your children, the way you father, like the way I'm fathering Mary right now is much different than the way I father Luke, my oldest. And for the papacy, I mean, that even is magnified a million times because he has the whole church, and the Catholic Church here in America looks much different than the Catholic Church in Africa and in Korea.
Or China.
In China. There's so many different... And so the way in which he has to respond to govern and to hold order and to also bring people closer to Christ through his actions looks so much different. And so it's easy to pile on at times and judge. And it's easy to even do that in our own friend circles, right? It's like, I can't believe that he's actually making the stand in front of everybody, or, you know, I can't believe he's not coming with us, or I can't believe he's not doing this thing with us, whatever it is. But as a father, one of the main... what I'm continually coming to a conclusion is like, as a dad, in order to be able to do the best, you know, do the right things for your children, there are boundaries and guidelines that you have to draw and draw a line in the sand and hold by for certain ones that you don't have to for others.
You mean for your kids?
For my kids.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Right. And so the analogy here with the papacy is like, there are certain guidelines that the papacy has to draw a line with the German church versus the American church. And knowing that, well, hopefully, knowing that one is going to do one thing and one's going to do another thing. And so
the German church could use a timeout. They let's be honest, they might need more than a timeout. Hey, Germans, you're on timeout, okay?
But as a dad, that's difficult to do because you know doing that is not, you're not going to be the fan favorite.
Yeah. But we're putting the Germans in timeout for their own good. How old are you, Germany? You're going to sit in timeout for that many minutes, okay?
And you will pray that many, many minutes the next morning.
That's right. That's a yes, sir.
Yes, sir. But I mean, so the papacy has, I mean, I just can't imagine being in that level with how difficult and complex fatherhood is in a domestic church in my own home.
Yeah. So the great news is that, you know, God provides the grace for every level of authority that he asks of us, right? Mm-hmm. So, for you as a father, okay, so when I pray for my children, those prayers are inherently, and like, I don't know if by nature is the right word, but I just mean that according to the like order of things, when I pray for my kids, those prayers are more efficacious. They have a stronger effect because of the authority I exercise over them, right? That it's actually my duty to pray for them. This is one of the things I'm compelled to do.
And not only pray for them, but pray for them in specific ways.
Yeah, right.
Right, so like I pray for Luke in a much different way than I pray for Anna, mm-hmm. and that I pray for Leo, and then I pray for John.
Or for your wife.
Or for my wife. You know, I ask for specific graces.
Or for me.
I don't really ever pray for you.
Dude.
I forgot to do
that. That is rude.
You know what? I need to start doing that.
After I specifically asked you not to. Or that's the line. But that's not, it doesn't really work very well in this particular situation.
I specifically asked you not to pray for me. I cannot.
What? You prayed for me after I specifically asked you not to.
But there are specific graces that I ask for that the Lord gives each individual child.
Yeah.
And specific graces that I ask for my wife. One thing that I have found very beneficial, as a husband that, you know, I think that you know, others may find beneficial as well, is that I always begin all of my rosaries for the grace that my wife falls deeper in love with our Lord through the intercession of our Blessed Mother.
Yeah.
That she is drawn closer to our Blessed Mother so she may be drawn closer to our Lord.
One of the prayers I say for my wife, and I feel like every now and then you come across something, I think this is like one of those prayer hacks, okay?
Okay, I'm listening.
I pray specifically to the Holy Spirit to give her a strong motherly intuition into the inner lives of our children.
I really like that.
So that, and I pray that with the intent of when I hear her say something like, I think something about our kids, I pay very close attention because I have been praying specifically to the Holy Spirit for her to have, and I feel like intuition is one of the gifts of a mother,
mm-hmm.
right? That they just Absolutely. Know by intuition what is happening with these children, mm-hmm. right? And so I pray specifically that the Holy Spirit would increase this motherly intuition for her. I'll give you, this is a good example. Years ago, we were going to send our kids TOTUS to us.
Years ago.
Long time ago. You know, maybe like 8 years ago. And we were going to send them to TOTUS to us. TOTUS to us is a great program. Pamela was a TOTUS to us, like teacher person.
She's an alum.
And got so much out of it. Like it's, we don't have time for how much to explain how much of our family culture actually comes from her experience in TOTUS to us. But we were going to send them, this is, you know, maybe the first time they were going to be old enough. And she just said, I don't know. I just don't. She just felt bad about it. And I said, nope.
We're not doing it.
Pulling the plug. And we didn't do it. You know, now, we didn't send them. So, like, nothing happened, right? Because they didn't go. But whether that was the right decision or maybe, like, you know, maybe that was just mixed signals. I don't know. But still, this is, I had been praying for this, and she said, you know, hey, I feel this way. And I don't vocalize to her. I've told her before that I pray this for her, but it's not something that I remind her about a lot because that's not important.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one of her vocations as a mother. And so I really want to pray for that specifically so that she can be the helpmate for me in with these family, you know, with these kids. So I do feel like that's one of those prayer hacks.
I like that.
That we can pray for. Use our authority, sort of our fatherly papacy, if you will.
There you go.
The papa.